Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hi, I'm Justin.
And I'm Josh.
And we host the Pretty OK Gamers podcast. Think of our show as water cooler conversations with a little less gossip and a little more geeking out.
My Halo, I think, is Legend of Zelda.
What? No way. Yeah. No.
Who are you again?
I'm Justin, and we're rather okay at playing pretty good games.
No. Every week, we talk about games and their history, and even ask ridiculous questions like, are open world games even good?
So come join us every Sunday on the HP Gaming Podcast Network. See you there.
See ya.
This show is part of the RetroZap.com Podcast Network.
Hey, yeah, you. Did you know that ArtCast is on Patreon? Go check out patreon.com/ArtCast for ways to help out the show and get some sweet perks in return. It could be something small, such as our $1 tier to show your support, or join one of our higher tiers to get a shout-out, pick an episode topic, or even be a part of the show as a special guest. Even just sharing our show to your friends goes a long way. Once again, that's patreon.com/ArtCast. Thanks for helping us, and keep it retro. What's up, Argonauts, and welcome to another Retro Gaming Podcast. This is episode 203 of the ArtCast. I am your host, David Gilton, and with me are a few burrito enthusiasts, if you will, Candace Shane.
Wow, I'm just getting lumped in with all sorts of stuff. I wasn't even here for burrito chat. I do the burritos, though. That's cool. Hi.
Totally.
As long as they're not San Diego style.
As long as.
You cannot put French fries into a burrito. It makes no sense.
No, you can't.
I'm going to start off controversial.
That's right. And the voice you're just hearing there is Garnett Lee from Raw Fury. How's it going there, Garnett?
It's outstanding. Beautiful day here in Seattle. Lovely quarantine lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Woo!
And the one, the only, Grimecraft. How's it going there, Grimey?
Yo, what is up, guys?
Nice. So we are celebrating here Final Fantasy VII in anticipation of Final Fantasy VII Remake coming out on Friday, actually. That is like the official release date, despite the fact that you have like a number of people now who are playing it and streaming it and all that stuff. But the official date is still on Friday, so you don't have to worry about that. But we are going to be celebrating the original game and, like, you know, our anticipation of the remake and all that stuff. But first, we want to get into some news here, starting off with the Intellivision Amico pre-sale numbers that got released here. So there were 10,000 pre-sales done in 1 week, and also major retailers ordered more than 100,000 units. So Tommy Tallarico, the CEO of Intellivision, who we've had on the show, and Candace certainly knows as well.
So ominous.
Yeah.
You can't say it like that.
I mean, just kind of get people to go back and listen to that episode. That is a really good episode.
Teaser. Yeah.
Exactly.
I know Tommy Tallarico. I know him.
Yeah.
Dude, come on. Pretty much anybody who meets Tommy knows him because he's such a nice person.
Oh, for sure.
He is.
I mean,
absolutely.
That's kind of goes without saying.
Totally, yeah. So Tommy here was quoted here saying, and that's one of the amazing things about this. All this is happening during the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. So I can't really deny that. But the consoles are going for somewhere between $249 and $279, which will include two controllers, six games, a $25 gift card, a 3D lenticular playing card signed by Tallarico, and three digital game soundtracks. So quite like a deal there, all things considered, depending on who you are anyway. But Candace, let's have you start off on this, actually. What do you think about these numbers for the Amico?
I know I personally want my hands on my own personal Intellarico Vision.
Intellarico Vision.
Yeah, I haven't pre-ordered anything, but I am interested in checking it out. I mean, in the current situation of bigger fish to fry, it's nice to have this still happening. That's cool. I mean, I don't really have a lot to say about it. I want to check it out. I'm glad that everything's okay. Glad Tommy's doing all right and he's signing, 3D lenticular cards?
Yep, that's the one.
Keep doing the work, Tommy. You're killing it. How about you guys? Yeah. Literally anybody but me.
I sort of hearken back to Ouya here, right? And
Okay. It's always a concern. It's always a concern.
Not in a negative way, but come on. I mean, it begs the comparison, right? And I like what they're doing. Look, the numbers right now, you could say you had 1,000 and you could make it sound great. 10,000 sounds pretty good. With 100,000 selling into retailers, that's a good start. I think it kind of depends on what we think it's going to become. And what I love about the ecosystem that they're building is that it's built around a stable platform, even if they're the only ones doing the only things that ever come out for it. And it's just this completely compartmentalized experience. And I think that's a lot of what they're aiming for. I think they've targeted it really well. I think the whole idea of nothing that's got anything higher than I think it's like an E10 rating on it, everything very accessible. I think it's a very interesting play to see if people want to have a machine hooked up to their television or their second screen or wherever they put it that isn't a classic traditional home console, but instead provides exactly what Tommy's has gotten at all along, which is couch co-op done right. And that's freaking genius. I mean, yeah. I think we're all going to remember. I mean, maybe one of the takeaways of the coronavirus quarantine is that, oh, that's right. Like being at home and being around the people you like love and like being with is actually pretty awesome.
Yeah. It makes you want to do more things with them, you know, that you can all kind of connect on. And I think if I trust anybody to do something like this is Tommy.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why I'm waiting to see how this goes. I want the best for it. I'm pretty biased because I feel like I really want Tommy to get this win.
Yeah. And if I didn't finish the thought, I mean, the reason I guess I maybe harken back sounds like a positive or a comparative. I mean, the thing is that I think that what differentiates here is that with someone like Tommy at the helm and this real intense love of experiences that we had in our childhood growing up and knowing how to recapture that you're doing something that's unique. Whereas what Ouya was doing was, hey, we're going to do an Android-based platform and it'll have some games and stuff on it that you've seen before and maybe have a few originals, but it was trying to punch against other conveyances of those sort of games. Whereas here you've got something that is completely on its own. It's totally pioneering. It's almost Nintendo-like in its approach.
Yeah, or at least what like people, I guess, like anticipate from Nintendo, at least being like, you know, family-friendly. But, you know, Nintendo never really kind of sought out like to do that anyway. They kind of stumbled upon that, honestly. So at least with like Tommy, like he is actually aiming to do that. And like as far as I know anyway with the Ouya, they were kind of like banking a little bit, I guess, on like building that community of people of basically making the games for them.
Yeah, the ecosystem, the indie ecosystem. Yeah.
I know it well. I was working around that and in and out of that while I was doing Fire TV Indie Games biz dev. So, and you know what? It's tough if you are in a place where you're trying to punch against well-established, well-funded platforms, and you're just trying to go against them and do the same thing, you're going to be dead in the water. But here, because they've really carved out this niche and have a great. I think the vision is what makes this separate. I mean, we're going to talk about Atari, I think, in a minute. And like this is where the two really separate from each other. It's like the vision here is so intense and clear and comes through so well to me that I think it's a success.
Yeah. Now, Grimecraft, I was kind of curious on your thoughts with the Intellivision Amico and if it's like something that is kind of like on your radar at all.
Well, you know, the one thing I've been thinking about is it's impossible to get a Nintendo Switch right now. And for around the same price range, you can get this. I mean, it doesn't ship till like October or something, right? But
yeah, it's October 10th.
Yeah, it's something to spend your money on. It's like, well, I can't play Animal Crossing, but
hold up, that way.
That's the one selling point. Yeah.
So I think it is filling a gap in like the console ecosystem right now. People have money they're trying to spend on something they can't get. So why not just put that somewhere else and help these guys out?
Yeah.
I mean, game sales have certainly gone up since the coronavirus quarantine and all that. So, you know, it certainly makes sense. You know, I feel like maybe that might inflate the numbers a little bit as far as like, you know, when the pre-sales went up for order. You know, but I'm definitely curious to see how this plays out, especially like as we see like how the country looks anyway, going into October.
Every day is a new challenge.
Now I got a question. How many of us had Intellivisions?
Definitely not me.
My neighbor did.
This guy over here trying to get us all to date ourselves. Listen, I'm 39 and I did not have an Intellivision until I was like 12. And I sought that out myself. Like, older consoles were already out, but I was like, there were ones before the Nintendo? Okay, well, I want to play those then. And so I was like 12 when I played it. So I don't think that counts.
I have no problem dating myself. One of my best friends had one. I had a ColecoVision, so it was like back and forth. The thing that I remember most about the Intellivision, though, was like, and I'm looking at those controllers, I almost get PTSD. Those controllers, like, they disintegrated so very quickly into dysfunctional states of frustration. So I love the design look of these. I just hope that I hope the durability holds up better than the originals.
Totally, yeah. I mean, like, whenever I see the Amico and, like, the controllers for it especially, I instinctively think of the old-school iPads, or the iPods, I should say, like, with the rotation wheel and everything. So we'll definitely see, like, how that does when it does release on 10/10/2020. But to move on to another console here, the Atari VCS, more specifically, the console designer for it is actually suing Atari over a breach of contract here. So there's definitely been, like, a lot of trouble with this console, it seems like. But there is Rob Wyatt, who is one of the console's chief architects, and he also runs the company Tin Giant. According to him, the retro gaming company owes them in excess of $261,720. And the amount represents work Wyatt did on the VCS, for which he hasn't been compensated. The suit says Wyatt and Tin Giant were contracted to work on the VCS in June 2018, but that the invoice Wyatt submitted for that work still hadn't been paid by October 2019. So Atari's not paying their people here, apparently.
Yikes.
And there's even like a defamation part of the lawsuit here as well. Because apparently Atari made false statements to the public about Tin Giant and its ability to complete the project. And the lawsuit, it says, in writing here, in fact, it was Atari's own mismanagement of the console project that caused the VCS's delay, not Tin Giant, which I am tempted to believe just based on previous stories related to this console. So, Candace, let's have you start off again here. What do you think about the Atari VCS and this latest bit of news here?
Being somebody who has kind of kept in touch with Atari over the past like decade, a little bit over a decade now, I'm not surprised by this. I wish I was. I hope that this guy gets paid. I mean, it says like it hasn't paid since June 2018.
Yeah.
That's a long damn time. I feel like there's got to be more to this. Apparently, the CEO, Fred, how do you say the last name? Chesney? Something French?
Oh, you're not going to trick me in. You're not going to trick me into messing that one up. Nope.
Chesney?
I think it's Chesney, yeah.
Oh, Chesney? Oh, Fred Chesney. All right.
Chesney O'Connor, yep.
All right, well, Mr. Chesney apparently declined to comment on the lawsuit, but that he hadn't received it. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be lying. I mean, it
could very well be lying. Yes.
He could be lying. Fred could suck for all
but
we know.
It's on the
now.
Internet. They can't be lying on the internet.
How long has good old Freddy boy been at the helm? I'm going to look Fred up. I want to know how long Freddy boy
is this
over
Fred
here.
Fred Chesney, if that is your real name.
Frederick Chesney.
Chesney, party of three, Chesney. Table's ready.
Oh, he's definitely French. There's a lot of little dashes and stuff over his name. I think you're right about the Chesney situation.
That's the giveaway, yeah. The dashes and shit. Yeah,
I definitely believe this is a French guy. Maybe that's the problem. He's French. He doesn't know. Like, he doesn't understand. He's just wheeling and dealing over there.
So Candace's remarks do not reflect those of our cast. So I just want to know that.
I didn't say anything bad.
You just have a thing against the French people in general. That's all.
I'm just saying, maybe it's a cultural thing, and he just, you know, get around to it.
You probably still order freedom fries too, huh?
Yeah. Wow.
Darn it,
goddamn America.
Don't start this. I'm looking him up though, and he does seem like the kind of guy to not pay people. I'm getting a real I won't pay people vibe off this dude.
All right. That's Exhibit A, Your Honor.
I brought him up on LinkedIn, and he's friends with some people we know.
Oh boy.
Maybe we can talk to him about that.
Maybe
you're gonna Maybe you can make sure that Frederick, good old Freddy boy, pays some folks. Hey, he went back to Atari. He worked for Atari in 2004 to 2007 as a CEO. So he left, dipped his toe in some other weird shit, and then came back to fuck it all up?
Inside information.
Cool.
So, Garnett, what do you think about all
this? I don't know that I have much to add to this.
Yeah.
Check, please.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Atari fans out there, right? I mean, there's definitely Atari fans. I think that the question has to be at this point, you know, is there fire underneath the smoke? It seems like, you know, they've been doing updates on production, and even if you read between the lines, their preliminary runs are very light. So, between that, the not paying people, it does seem to make you wonder, like, hey, as long as they've been at this, do they have a cash flow problem? Are they going to be able to get to the finish line with this? Will they be able to get it, you know, at least established out there in the public so they could turn into something other than just a interesting conversation for collectors 10 years from now?
I mean, sure, we could say the businessy stuff.
Yeah.
We could be responsible about it.
Yeah. Oh,
God, I've been working too long now. Oh, God, I guess I do that.
So Grindcraft, is this like something that that you feel like they should be worried about with Atari here?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a cash problem. So I guess in 2018 they raised just over $3 million. I mean, knowing from having a startup myself, you go through that money pretty quickly. And yep. I mean, I certainly haven't developed a console before that, you know, no one asked for. I mean, at least this is like an evolution of the console, you know, the whole streaming creative. I don't know.
I mean, that's what they're trying to like shoot for anyway. Yeah. But as far as like how they're actually going about the, you know, the like development of the console, and certainly with the people who they're working with anyway, certainly mismanagement is like the word that comes to mind for sure, as you know, as Rob White here says. So
yeah, Rob is missing basically a year's worth of income for being a lead engineer on the project.
So yeah, and that's rough.
What that says to me is that they didn't have the money to pay him. They probably had money to pay people that were making less, but you know, they couldn't afford him, and that means they're out of money.
And it just keeps getting worse, right? Because once you're behind the eight ball like that, then if you're building units but you're not making as big an order, that means your unit cost goes up, which means the revenue you're taking off each one goes down. It just keeps getting worse and worse.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm seeing the numbers, like they were only backed by like 11,000 people, which isn't that many people. Like, if you can think like
that,
yeah, those are like the diehards. So the diehard people who wanted this to happen, there's 11,000 of those people. There will be a significantly smaller portion of people who are going to get this at retail. So it seems like a disaster. I mean, I have always looked at Indiegogo projects and Kickstarter projects as just the biggest red flags ever. It's like, all right, here's like a recipe for mismanaging funds and having a startup without like any of the responsibility of, you know, paying back VCs or you know, creating equity. Or I mean, I don't know how people run these projects, but it was bizarre when it was first announced that Atari was even doing something like this.
You said it was 11,000 people?
Yeah.
Well, just to give you an idea, the LACC has a capacity of 10,000. So a little bit over the Los Angeles Convention Center worths of people.
I think I've got this sorted out. So what you're saying is, if Oprah did a special show there, she could say, look under your seats, everyone gets an Atari. Yeah,
and that right. would be the Kickstarter.
There you go.
That would
be the Kickstarter.
The Indiegogo, yeah. The point is, there's just not a lot of folks, right? So, I mean, it was kind of doomed, I think, from the start.
Yeah, I mean, like it seems like it anyway. I mean, because I've met the people who like run Atari nowadays very briefly, but I did get to meet them and kind of get like a feel for them a little bit. And they definitely had like a more hopeful, but, you know, not sure if this is all going to work out kind of vibe to them, you know, which didn't exactly give me a whole lot of confidence. But at the same time, I'm still like curious, like, okay, they're coming out with like a new Atari console. That's cool. Like they seem to be doing, you know, like have some cool ideas behind it. And then, you know, when they have like the Indiegogo, I'm like, Indiegogo, I'm not quite sure about that. Cause like Indiegogo is even more of a red flag than Kickstarter is. And especially for, you know, for like Atari and like not being able to get like investors for it. Like, I'm not sure if they have like, you know, any investors at all for this. I'm not entirely sure on that end of it, but, you know, as far as like, you know, what they're doing in response to the people who, you know, who did invest into this, and depending on what happens with this lawsuit, it's very unclear if like this will actually see like the light of day. So that's like the part of it I think I'm most curious about now is like if we will actually see this console come out with this lawsuit, and depending on how serious it gets and all that. So we'll definitely wait and see on that. But a little bit more happier news anyway. Streets of Rage 4 is including some retro music and characters in here. So Streets of Rage 4 is coming out like pretty soon from what I heard. Like there was like a leak I know for I believe like for like later this month, but .emu, the publisher behind it, they basically debunked that and said that we haven't like announced it yet, but it should be announced very soon and all that. They did show off like this really awesome trailer here, showing that you can unlock characters from Streets of Rage 1, 2, and 3, and that the characters will look and play exactly like they did on the Genesis, and also they'll include music from Streets of Rage 1 and 2. So that is pretty rad. And also what's really rad too is, you know, if you really notice at the end of the trailer, because like I know with like Streets of Rage 4, they have like what's called like star moves, which is kind of like big like super moves that's like, you know, clear the screen and all that. So it seems like the star moves for the retro characters are going to be the when you call in like the police car and the guy shoots a bazooka and clears out the screen and all that from Streets of Rage 1. So that's pretty freaking awesome. But Candace, I was curious on what you thought when you first saw this retro reveal trailer.
I know I'm thankful because I really need Streets of Rage 4 to answer all the questions Streets of Rage 3 left.
Oh, really? Okay. The lore has to continue. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to know how many more tank tops are going to be in this one.
Yeah. What's the economy like? Yeah.
If we're going to get more mullets. Honestly, I think it's funny. This was brought up to me by my roommate. He walked in very excited and he goes, okay, who here cares about Streets of Rage 4? And I was like, do you care about it? And he said, yes. And I go, that's all that matters.
I had no idea your roommate was Axel. Damn, that's awesome.
he's very excited.
He wakes up in the morning and go, Grandpa!
I know this sounds odd, but I think I'm more excited for the music.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the music from those games. And it says that Yuzo Koshiro, yep, is going to be composing this one. I think that's pretty exciting.
He's part of the team for it anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think that's super exciting. I love watching these games get played, especially during things like AGDQ and all that stuff. I love seeing people play this.
Yeah.
So I'm really into that. It's not really my kind of game. Never really was. It was always one of those games, like somebody would be like, you want to play this? I'm like, sure.
Sure. You know? Grimecraft, would this be the type of game that you would want to score for, knowing your music penchant?
Yeah. I mean, I love video game music, clearly. So I think that's the part I'm more excited about. I'm actually, after looking at the trailer, from an art direction standpoint, I don't know why they would go with the original sprites, because they kind of look out of place.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, it looks kind of weird to me. But you know, I would never make that call personally. If I was the art director in this project, I'd be like, oh, let's, you know, let's make the HD version, let's go all the way.
It seems like that these are meant to be unlockables that you get from like completing the game or doing whatever objectives, yeah, pretty much in the game. But it's just kind of like a fun little like retro nod basically, like with that and like the music, and they still have like the upgraded versions of like characters of like Axel and Adam Hunter and things like that. So I'm definitely excited for that at least. But yeah, Garnet, I was kind of curious if you're a Streets of Rage fan, if you're excited for this.
Well, I was a Genesis guy, so I mean, it definitely have that like sort of pull to it. But I don't know, man. I think that's a tough question, simply because sometimes I sit down and play a game like this, and I like it. Yes, I am. You know what? I realized it's a are you in the mood sort of place, right? It's a are you in the mood sort of place. You guys started sidetracking. I was thinking about music, and suddenly my mind was fixated on TurboGrafx, because you know, TurboGrafx games always seem to have like the best music of this era for me.
Oh.
I don't know why. Sort of like harkening back to that. Well, there's that word again, harkening back. Obviously, that's on my brain too.
I love that word.
I know.
So
I'm going to harken back to it another couple of times.
I bet you will.
You actually harken me back to a word I've been saying a lot, which is era. which is the name of my album that's dropping this year.
Oh, awesome. There you go. Promo drop.
Promo drop.
Bah, bah, bah. Yeah.
I was reminded when I saw that of how much I really appreciated the number of frames of animation it takes to make really cool animations and how there's no substitute. And one of the cool aspects of these games always comes from how much work and love and craftsmanship goes into making all those things that we take for granted when we play and just see them go through the frames so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Totally, totally, yeah.
So to that extent, coming full circle, yeah, I guess I'm excited for Speed of Rage.
All right. That's all I wanted to know. Okay.
Now you see what it's like living inside my brain. It's a terrifying place.
Yeah. Like honestly, this is like probably the best case scenario for me because I remember like the last time I got to speak with the, I believe like the main director, I believe for the game. I forget exactly his title, but I remember speaking with him during PAX East and I was actually asking him, because like the idea came to mind when I was recording with him, that what if we had pixel skins for like the characters, like the old school characters that are coming back. So like Axel and Blaze and Adam. And, what if you had like skins basically, but like still like, you know, animate in kind of like this, you know, same way and everything. And he was just like, not sure. Like that would definitely require a lot more work. It's like, well, maybe DLC down the line or something. It's like, maybe. And then all of a sudden this trailer drops. It's like, oh, okay. Maybe he couldn't like say anything because obviously they were doing this instead. So it was pretty cool like to see that. And also like seeing like the police car from Streets of Rage 1 comes back, definitely makes me like wonder if they will bring back the option that you had at the end of Streets of Rage 1, where when you beat the boss, if you're doing two player, you have it like where the big boss of the game, instead of fighting him, he makes you fight each other in order to become his right hand man of like the town and everything. So I think that'd be like really cool if they did add that in there, but we'll kind of like wait and see on that. But we should be seeing some Streets of Rage 4 very soon, possibly at the end of this month, but we'll definitely keep some tabs on that. But another game here that is coming out apparently is a Pong RPG. Yes, that's right. Pong, the battle game, is getting an RPG here called Pong Quest. So gamers can now play as a personalized paddle on an adventure to save the world, journeying through various dungeons based on Atari's other retro titles, such as Asteroids and Centipede. As with all RPGs, you'll get to customize the outfit and gear for your little paddle and even make custom Pong balls used to defeat enemies. Your custom character can then be brought into the game's online multiplayer mode where you can play with three other friends. So,
hey, wait a minute. I hate this.
This can't be real. This can't be real.
It's apparently a real thing.
You know what? It was posted on April 1st. This fucking can't be real.
You know what? Yeah, I think you're right on that.
You didn't check.
Pegged.
What are you doing?
I think you're right. I think you might be right. Let me check on that, actually. I just saw like the trailer for it. You might be right, actually. It might be an April Fool's joke in that case.
We got got.
I just got noticed got. Right now. I got got I anyway. Yeah.
I will say that this harkens back, as we like to say.
No!
Hark!
To all the fun we used to have at EGM. So the best of the EGM April Fool's ever was the one that people took the most to heart was Lego Halo. Seriously, the art team did an amazing job mocking it up. And remember, there was like that era of like Lego everything, and man, people bought into it hook, line, and sinker. Like, yeah, that's totally happening. Lego Halo, Lego Master Chief.
Like, I mean, is that part because like people want it to happen? Maybe.
Like, oh yeah, that was the key to like doing that, especially doing it in the magazine, like because you know you had like print pictures, and it was still of an era when like you know there was internet, obviously, and people were on the internet doing stuff. But when the magazine came out, there was still sort of that like magazine exclusive reveal.
Right, right.
Maybe that's the reason they went with Mega Bloks instead of Lego when they actually did that collaboration for like for bricks.
Yeah, Halo Roblox or something.
No, like there's a toy, the Mega Bloks, Halo Mega Bloks are an actual thing. Yeah.
I mean, like the reason why I thought this was real though is because the way the Hypebeast writes about it here, I mean, like, they even like end it with saying like, for those interested, Pong Quest is due to release sometime in spring for $15 and will be available on PC via Steam, Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4. And then they link to like another article that like the article for like the stories on NBA players playing in NBA 2K players tournament, which I know that's real.
Okay, so it's on Steam, so it's clearly real.
Okay, there you go. I wasn't wrong. It all comes back full circle. So this is a real thing. So
okay, let's talk about it.
that begs the question that I have to ask each of you: which classic gaming franchise would you like to see come back as an RPG?
Whoa.
Yeah.
This was not in my pre-show notes, so
it was not. No, I'm just dropping on you.
Classic franchise to come back as an RPG. You guys bail me out here.
Sonic.
Ooh. Oh, there you go.
Sonic RPG. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what Sonic Adventure.
Sonic Adventures.
Was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we already went that route.
But
didn't we?
I mean, there was no turn-based battles, so.
Okay, so you want turn-based RPGs?
I mean, I don't really want turn-based. It's 2020, but I would love a Sonic RPG. That would be kind of cool. If they did a Sonic Adventure remake, that would be so awesome.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. Candace?
I'm still thinking about this whole Sonic thing.
Yeah. What if they did a Mario RPG?
They would never.
Never.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like Pac-Man. We got to go somewhere with this, right?
I think that's happened.
RPG would be cool.
Is there a Pac-Man RPG?
I remember something like that in the PlayStation 1. Hold up.
There was a Pac-Man. There was like platformers, I know, but
I wanted to be like an Elder Scrolls scenario here.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. So,
first person fighting dragons and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be easy to go Phantasy Star route with Pac-Man. That's fine. I want to really break down and get into the whole mythos of Pac-Man. And I would like my RPG to be set that way. No, I actually have no idea. I feel like I don't want to see a lot of my beloved game franchises bastardized and turned into RPGs. I like them where they are. I don't need a bunch of different takes. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
I feel like every time they do that, it hurts me a little bit.
I mean, it's worse when they do it with an RPG to something else. Like I remember Phantasy Star Online. Episode 3 was a card battle game.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Wow, that was just not what
painful.
I wanted to play.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, and I mean, like, sometimes it can be done and people enjoy it, right? Like, you know, like you were talking about Mario RPG, you know?
Great game.
Classic. You were talking, you know, there's Sonic Adventure, and sometimes new takes are done and they work. And then other times they don't. And it ends up tarnishing that franchise. And I don't know. I feel weird about it.
Well, if I can hearken back to a previous story here, what if Streets of Rage was turned to an RPG? It has the characters for it, so.
Interesting.
How would you do that?
Pitch me.
Pitch it to me. Yeah, there you go.
Pitch it to me. All right. I mean, I guess like turn-based, yeah, but like going through like a, you know, contemporary city with like the music and all that, but like, you know, it's basically have like that feel basically of Streets of Rage, but maybe like the turn-based is also mixed with some of the beat-em-up elements, so maybe like, you know, well, maybe, yeah, I don't know, I'm thinking like maybe like more like action RPG, I guess. You know, not
yeah,
necessarily
like
turn-based.
Yeah, I mean, like a Scott Pilgrim-y thing, I think, is the closest that I've seen.
Yeah, something like that.
To that.
Yeah, but where you can still pick up, like, you know, food, like, on the ground and stuff, so you still have to, like, move around, like, while you're doing battle. So, I don't know. That's definitely one that I have to kind of, like, think more about. But I think, like, a beat-em-up RPG, kind of like what they're doing, actually, with, what's it called? Beatdown in Treachery City, or I forget exactly what that's called, but, like, it's like, a game that's
Those
coming out very soon
words
on the Switch.
You said.
Yeah, yeah. That was like Beatdown in Treachery City or something like that.
Sounds like a thing.
Yeah, or like Treachery and Beatdown.
What about
City,
a Doom RPG?
A Doom RPG. Okay, all right.
Could there be you interesting. Go. Yeah. Figuring that out.
Yeah.
Pitch it.
I guess,
I'm just going to start saying things now.
Yeah. How about Doom as an RPG?
How about
Half-Life as an RPG?
How about Nokia Snake?
How about Seaman?
My actual answer that I arrived at is probably not old enough, but you know, something like, I think that some of the iconic action game or adventure, you know, action and not adventure but sort of active game, like Ratchet and Clank could be interesting. You've already got the itemization through all the weapons, you've got some cool worlds that they've explored, so you've already got like some built-in game mechanics and areas to sort of build out and explore in a different way, maybe, but it would be tough to write that design doc, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of like a game franchise that has like a list of characters that could be used as like a party, basically,
yes.
As well as like have like a bunch of people like to, you know, take over like the you know, have like the towns, like have like a world they can actually like explore in, or like, you know, hasn't been explored yet but has the potential at least.
Marvel Capcom.
Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, Marvel vs. Capcom for sure.
I mean, we can all say the obvious one, but Club Penguin's actually being revived. So
we'll stay tuned for that one. But yeah, so apparently Pong RPG is a real thing, and we'll definitely be staying tuned to that. So
glad we like mystery solved that on podcast.
8 days after April Fool's Day.
Right? It's a real Scooby-Doo adventure here.
So bizarre.
Welcome.
So that's going to lead us now to the part of the show called What Are You Playing? We get some games you've all been playing or have recently beat. So let's start with you, Candace, and then go Garnet and then Grindcraft. So how about you there, Candace?
I don't know if you've been paying attention to my Twitter even in the slightest. I think it's pretty clear I've been playing a lot of Animal Crossing. However, a lot of it has been hate playing. Because
the man got you down.
Tom, that damn dog. It's not even about him.
It's not even about him. He's fine. You know what? In fact, if anything, I might have a slight crush on him. It's been weird the past few weeks.
Stockholm syndrome. Right?
It's been a weird few weeks.
Underground music coming in now.
Little raccoon man who gives me a nice house, and I just have to go clean up a yard once in a while. I love this guy. He's fine. He's not my problem. But, so listen, in this game, which I have to keep reminding myself it's a game and not a lifestyle choice I've made.
No, it's a lifestyle choice.
Totally. It is. Yeah, totally.
I went to an island in the very beginning before I had houses, and I met this bull named Rodeo. And he terrified me. It was nighttime. I was doing tours at night, and a shadow of a bull showed up with big red glowing eyes, and he scared the hell out of me. And then he moved onto my godforsaken island, and I've been trying to get rid of him ever since. I beat him with a net. I constantly give him terrible things. I keep trying to figure out a way to get rid of him. And then I finally found out today none of those methods work, and they just make him like me more. So
have
much
you tried building
my
a wall?
Typical dating life, I've been going about it all wrong.
The policy hasn't gone through. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it turns out Rodeo likes it when I beat the shit out of him with a bug net. And he also really enjoys the shitty gifts I give him. So I've been doing it all wrong. And I just am stuck with this idiot forever. Again.
So you're experiencing Stockholm Syndrome with Tom Nook, and Rodeo is experiencing Stockholm Syndrome with you, basically.
Yeah, he digs the hell out of me. Even after I beat him with the net, like he'll be like, yay, stop it, that sucks. And I'm like, all right.
All right,
so
you're into it, I get it.
And then I talk to him because I'm like hoping he's going to be like, hey, do you want me to leave? And I'll be like, yeah, dude. Yeah. Like, hit it. And what happens?
I have a feeling
I'm
not wanted around here.
Yeah, and then he goes, I forgive you. And I'm like, fuck, we're back at fucking square one again.
I think you're writing a screenplay.
Yeah.
So that's been going on. I've been setting up weird little social gatherings, but I don't actually want to talk to anybody. So they're like...
So anti-social gatherings, really.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. I'm just like, my island's open. Don't look for me.
Right.
And then I put an eye mask on, and I hide in my pear-shaped bed, and I just let people do what they must.
All right.
And I give them the instructions to come take what they want or go do whatever they need to do, and I just hide in my house.
All right.
Until they leave.
All right, cool party.
Yeah, so if, cool I mean, party. I feel like if a psychiatrist, maybe somebody that Fred Chernay knows, could tell me what's going on here, it'd be great.
We're going to have to get him on the show at some point to talk about this. Garnet, how about you?
So I'm going to do that horrible thing to start off with, which is like, God, it's so awesome to work for an indie game publisher because I have to answer that most of the stuff I can't tell you about, but it's right, so cool. Right. You know, I'm playing some stuff that is really continuing to excite me with how well indie game development continues to find new ways to evolve creativity, to continue to not get caught up in chasing massive amounts of features, to continue to be like all about what really made retro games great, which is finding something that you can do and doing it really, really well and making it really fun to play. Which kind of leads to my Animal Crossing complaint, which is that I really had hoped that they would have found more polish around the things that we enjoyed in the game and built on them. And I don't know, man, this is the Animal Crossing is not quite pulling me into the extent that I had expected it would. The Easter event notwithstanding, which is
the Easter event came way too soon. I mean, I'm sure they didn't plan for this because the game did get delayed, but having that be like the second, third week of the game is, you know, just ruining the game for a lot of people, I think.
Completely derailed my experience. So you actually just articulated that perfectly. That is exactly what it is, I think. So so there's that. And then the other weird thing I did to myself is in the other game time, like in my big screen gaming time, a few months ago, I decided I was going to put myself on 7 Remake Media Blackout. But that got me interested again, and I reminded myself that I hadn't ever played 15.
Bro trip.
Hey, at least you didn't play it when it first came out, because Chapter 13 was... Oh, my God.
Oh my God! I heard some not so good.
First of all, I can't even imagine that when it came out, it didn't have pause mode, because it's already a schizophrenic Ritalin mess. I mean, holy cow! There's not enough Adderall in the world to keep up with that game.
I can play it one handed, and then the other hand can be twirling a glow stick around. It's awesome.
There you go. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, moving right along. I am such a freaking Final Fantasy fanboy that I can like still find myself like 2 hours into it being going like, wow, I have no idea what just happened for the last 2 hours, but that was kind of fun. What the hell is wrong with me?
I mean, there's a lot of references for the fans. There's a lot of fan services in that game.
I enjoyed it. I thankfully didn't finish it until well after they fixed a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But I had a good time with it. It was definitely a game.
It was a game.
It was definitely a game, yes.
Yeah.
A game. You know, the other game I've been dying to go back to, because I never finished it, of all the Final Fantasies, since we're going to talk about that, is I only got about halfway through 12. And I've always found 12 to be really, like, I don't know, I enjoyed it. I thought that as the system of telling your compatriots how they want to do the behave, got the logic change, got really pretty successful at making that a fun game. I don't know, anyone else like 12?
It set the stage for everything going forward, I feel like.
I went back with the Zodiac Age. I tinkered with a little bit of that. Well, that's the same one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just major quality of life improvements with Zodiac.
Absolutely, yeah. When I got to sit down with that one at E3, I haven't played it since, but when I got to like sit down with that one at E3, I felt like it improved that game and made it so I actually would be able to sit through that game again, because the problems that I had with it are the ones that they addressed in Zodiac Age. So I'm really excited to go back to that one now because of that.
How about you there, Grindcraft?
Well, I have played over 200 hours of Animal Crossing. but mostly because I've been live streaming. I've been throwing raves in Animal Crossing and doing a live stream. and it's been really cool. And, you know, I actually talked with Forbes and Kotaku and a publication out of Chicago about it, because it's apparently a pretty cool idea. But that sounds like talking about work. What I'm doing for fun right now is playing Final Fantasy VII Remake. I got a press key a few days ago, and I didn't even realize it was one. And then like I booted it up 2 days ago, and I was like, oh my God, this is a press key. That makes sense, because they want me to stream it on Thursday at 9 a.m.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. I have mixed feelings about it, honestly. Final Fantasy VII is one of my favorite games ever. They definitely like expand on it, like the story beats of Midgar are there, obviously, but they kind of like make everything in between a little long. I don't know, the pacing's kind of weird. I'm about 10 hours into it right now, so I'm liking it more and more, and having a, you know, I have a huge appreciation for the world building they're doing with it. So yeah, I don't know, it's a game. That's for sure.
It's a game. All right. It's a great review right there. Yeah. It's a game. It's a game. Yeah.
It's weird. I keep having these like PS1 flashbacks when you do a certain part. I'll just like, oh, I remember doing exactly this, but
muscle memory,
PS1
right?
Version. Almost.
Is it muscle memory? Yeah. Cause like when I was doing the demo, I was kind of startled because I hadn't played the like Final Fantasy VII since the first time I played it, when it first came out for PlayStation, right? And I guess I'd played it a lot when it first came out. I know I definitely played it a few times, But ever since that last time when I was like a teenager, I hadn't played it again. But for some reason, when I was playing the demo, I remembered things that I didn't think I'd remember. It was very bizarre.
Yeah. The mind is a funny thing like that. But yeah, definitely excited to try a remake for sure. But as far as what I played, though, I actually beat Doom 64 recently, which was a really fun playthrough until you get to that last boss. That last boss in that game is complete BS. Like, it's literally just like this big, like, alien queen, basically, that, like, fires, like, a fire on the ground. Dude. I mean, it's whatever. It's like the last boss of Doom 64. So. but, like, she, like, basically fires fire, like, on the ground. That, like, if it hits you, it pops you way up in the air, and that's, like, meant to be kind of like a combo, basically, to, like, the homing missiles that she has coming after you, and the homing missiles, of course, go faster than you, so you have to be, like, really, like, I don't know, be, like, just booking it, basically, and just trying to use whatever terrain you have, because, like, it's basically, like, a big, wide-open area, but you have, like, some terrain here and there they can use in order to cut off the missiles, but the missiles have, like, I don't know, they're, like, super heat-seeking, so, like, it took, like, no lie, like, almost, like, 100 tries, like, to beat her. It was ridiculous to take her down. But, I eventually did, and I was just glad to get that, done and over with. And aside from that, too, I'm playing through the original Final Fantasy VII right now on the Nintendo Switch. I actually just got to the part where you're going to the North Cave, so basically the beginning of Disc 3 for that. So,
that's totally coming in one of my favorite spots.
Because I played through it once before, so this is the second time ever I'm playing through it. So I'm kind of like reminding myself a lot of like some of the story beats, and I was definitely reminding myself of that, especially with that the Hojo fight and all that. So this guy reminded me, like, oh yeah, okay, like I remember getting to this point last time. But definitely enjoying it so far. There's certainly some things I have like issues with as well, but we'll get into that like when we get to like the main topic.
Welcome back to the Stage of History.
So that's going to lead us now into the Stage of History, which is a celebration of retro titles that deserve a spot, for better or for worse, in the pantheons of history. So I figure since we are talking about Final Fantasy VII, we'll talk about one of the games here that is part of the compilation of Final Fantasy VII, if you will, which is Dirge of Cerberus, Final Fantasy VII. So this is a 2006 action role-playing third-person shooter by Square Enix. It is set 3 years after the events of Final Fantasy VII and focuses on playable character Vincent Valentine. As the first shooter game in the franchise, the design team found the experience, quote, challenging, and added role-playing elements to help mitigate that. And the North American and European releases received a major overhaul, including the removal of online multiplayer from the Japanese version. So,
what?
Yeah. So, Garnet, let's have you start off with this, actually. Have you played Dirge of Cerberus?
My memory of Dirge of Cerberus was listening to Andrew Pfister back in the 1UP era go, "Damn, what? Ah, I cannot believe this!"
I think I remember that, actually, yeah.
Thankfully, we have a warning system, early warning system like that. You're like, I mean, I think I can probably skip on that. So I did. I will not even front. I totally skipped on it.
Wow.
Really?
Right. Mm-hmm. No right, Dirge. The only Dirge is the Dirge I played for it.
Yeah.
You know, I actually didn't play it too, but I did watch my brother play through most of that game. I remember during that time I was super duper into Phantasy Star Online. Same. Most of my time was playing that, but he'd be in the same room playing that game. It looked all right. I don't know why I didn't play it, because Vincent's one of my favorite characters in the game. Probably had something to do with like, oh, the PS2 is his and blah blah blah. And I actually had a similar experience with the original Final Fantasy VII, where I wasn't allowed to play that game until he was done with it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
but still, I still have fond memories of it. I'm glad we're talking about it. I haven't heard about that game in so long.
Yeah, because there were like a few games that Square Enix like tried to kind of like spin off of Final Fantasy VII. I know, so Dirge of Cerberus was one of them. There was also Before Crisis, which was a phone game, I believe. And then there was also Crisis Core too, which is the I believe it was a PSP game.
Yeah, I have that still.
Yeah. So Candace, have you played Dirge of Cerberus?
Oh, have I?
Okay, all right. Now we're getting somewhere.
This was one of the games that was kind of forced on me to play because I had to review it, and it was my fault that I had to review it, because I got invited to the Square Enix sit down that they had. And the weird thing was, is like every time I would say for about 3 or 4 years, Square Enix would have these very bizarre little meetups, and like they're during E3, where you have to go into this dark little theater, and they would take your phones away, and they would take anything away that you could possibly, you couldn't even have a notebook to write anything down. They wanted nothing. They just wanted you to go in there nearly nude and just watch their trailers.
Without a phone or anything. Yeah.
Watch their trailers. And so because I had been invited to these, they thought, that must mean Square Enix wants you to review these games. And I was like, I don't think that's true. And I really didn't want it to be true with Dirge of Cerberus, because every time they showed us stuff in the lead up to E3, like during E3, they'd show us like to the year's release, because it came out in 2006, August 2006. And so I had been to that E3 right before it came out, and they sat me in this tiny little round theater where all the sounds of E3 are so loud, and yet they try to block out a bunch of it, but they do a terrible, piss poor job. And so you hear like talking and loud people, and then you're trying to focus, and you have these speakers blaring in your face where they show you a bunch of trailers to things that they haven't finished, have already released, and they mix it all up with games that are about to come out. So they don't even tell you. Like, they showed us stuff for the Final Fantasy VII movie, which my brain Advent Children. They showed us a trailer for Advent Children. Advent Children had already been out, and they showed us a trailer for it. And then they showed us a trailer for Dirge of Cerberus. And they're like, here you go. Neat, right? And then they showed us a bunch of stuff that wasn't even in the game. We're like, okay. And then they showed us trailers for Kingdom Hearts stuff. And like they didn't even tell you that it was a part of Kingdom Hearts. You just had to guess. Like, it was like they cut a bunch of trailer pieces into one big
messy.
There's
a rhyme or reason behind. Like,
minutes of chaos. Yeah. They showed us a few snippets of Final Fantasy. I want to say 13. Yes, 13. And then after a few snippets of Final Fantasy 13, the sequel to Final Fantasy 13, a few snippets of that as well. Like, it seemed like they were just kind of throwing together all of their current works in progress, you know, mm-hmm. and just putting it in front of us and then going, don't tell anybody what you just saw. And we're like, cool. So because I went back to my team and I was like, yeah, I saw this and this is kind of what I made out of this. And yeah, we already know about Dirge of Cerberus, so we can talk about that. And they're like, yeah, cool. You can play the game when it comes out. And I was like, no, I don't want to. And then I did. And then it was not good. And what I have learned from that is that Square Enix was really excited to release a game to kind of market off of Final Fantasy VII, because Advent Children had done gangbusters, right? So they're like, people obviously still care about Final Fantasy VII, so we're going to make Dirge of Cerberus because moody vampire guys, right?
Yeah.
And then they got Monolith Soft to help them.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yes. Monolith Soft, who made, you know, not Final Fantasy games. They made Xenosaga and like Xenoblade Chronicles and stuff like that. And that's great, but it's not Final Fantasy. And like,
I love those games though.
They're great. They're great, but they're not Final Fantasy games. You know,
I mean, so Dirge of Cerberus wasn't really a Final Fantasy game either. They were definitely trying for something different.
That's what I'm saying though, is like, there were a lot of people who wanted a Final Fantasy game with this story and this character.
Right.
And were very unhappy that it was not. Because you gotta keep in mind, like, when it comes to these kind of RPGs, there's a lot of people who are widely fans of one type of series, but not of the others. Like, I don't know many people who are huge fans of Phantasy Star and Final Fantasy. I know. That's awesome. And I know I am. I really, really, really love a lot of these RPGs, but I was never a huge fan of Xenosaga and Xenoblade. It wasn't like that I didn't like the Xeno series. It's just, it didn't really capture me. So then when you give me a game, you tell me it's Final Fantasy. And then I put it in and I'm like, oh, Okay.
Yeah. It walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, but isn't quite a duck. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, it didn't feel right. A lot of the stuff they had shown us wasn't even in the game. There were multiplayer aspects of it. There were all these things that were taken out.
So they were showing you the Japanese version of it, basically, before they made changes to the North America version, yeah.
Yes, and like that was another big problem I had.
So what do you remember, though, of like the multiplayer version, like based on what you saw?
Based on what I saw, it was kind of like, do you guys remember Power Stone?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it reminded me a lot of Power Stone.
Really?
And it was really promising. Yeah, it was super promising. And it was like you sit with your friends and you essentially would, you know, kind of play keep away. And it was very it was very fun. It was very Power Stone-esque. I don't really know what to call Power Stone. I don't know.
It's basically like Arena Fighter. It's
brawler.
Yes. Yeah. It was like a brawlery kind of capture the flaggy kind of thing. It was really cool, though. Yeah, and they took it out. And they had no intentions of ever putting it back like that.
The PS2 wasn't really known for online gaming. I think that was like a big part of it. You know?
Well, no. Right. But they were supposed to be a local thing. Right. But the problem was, is like, I guess there were more things in place for 4-player games.
Right.
Like there were more people that used 4-player peripherals than there were in North America. And so they just went ahead and said, like, they still need to do QA for it. It wasn't necessarily a thing they were really set in stone on. I thought it looked really cool. I was really into it, but they never had it. So, like, the one thing I was really excited about wasn't even in it. I just feel like the story was good, but because the game was so against the grain of Final Fantasy, you kind of tune out, you know? Mm. It's kind of like when you... This is going to sound so nerdy, but you know, like when you're watching a movie and a phone rings and you see the phone, but you know that ring's not from that phone.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's what that game feels like. It's one of those things where your brain goes, that's not right. Just keep gnawing on it. That's what Dirge of Cerberus felt like to me.
That's fair.
Yeah.
All right. You know, you might not be able to play Dirge of Cerberus right now on modern consoles, but you can certainly play this game on Switch. I have a game code giveaway here for Mextermination Force. So battle against massive bosses, jump and climb onto them to find their weak spots and blow them to kingdom come in this action-packed platforming boss rush. When the Mega Mechs have taken control of the world, one small group of brave soldiers are still fighting for humanity's independence. Join them and lead the charge against the mechanical menace. So if that sounds like a jam, definitely jump on this. Again, this is a Switch code. The code is C02XX915-1V0LLR83. Again, that's Mextermination Force on Switch. Enjoy. And if you do redeem that, definitely let us know at ARK Podcast on Twitter.
Hey, everybody, it's Dustin from the HP Podcast.
And this is Ben. We're just coming here to tell you about our show, well, the HP Podcast.
The HP Podcast is a weekly video game podcast from HandsomePhantom.com that's also part of the HP Video Game Podcast Network. And, Ben, it's a little hard to describe our show because it's a little bit of everything.
We get into a lot of shenanigans. We also talk about some news. We have some pretty serious topics sometimes. But sometimes our friend Brandon takes his shirt off and just does the show that way. So you should definitely check it out.
I think he got stuck to the seat last time.
It's possible.
So that was a time.
Yeah.
So anyway, check out our show. We would love that.
The HP Podcast. Go again for the 7th time. Got material and I'ma let it shine. Time to school these shuggers when the music bumping. Seen it coming like a prophetic sign. On the day they plan to scare the line. Better get in line. Never squinting time. Sheba got to run into the exercise. This is final heaven like a 9-11. Yeah. Limit break, put you in your place. Demo dish, you can demonstrate. Pizza on the dinner plate. Turn my lemons into lemonade. Explosion, no explosion. Can cover up what I'm exposing. This game over, your next motion is spoiled like you got left. And that's going to lead us now to our main topic, which is celebrating Final Fantasy VII.
So I figure we'll start off actually with basically what this game meant for RPG fans, because this was like a huge deal. I remember this game, just like off the top of my head anyway, this was meant to be for the Nintendo PlayStation.
It was?
Yeah. Yeah, the like CD peripheral or totally CD was. Like you know console basically that Sony was making for Nintendo at the time, and you know because I think originally the plans anyway for it to be on SNES and then switched over to the Nintendo PlayStation CD thing, and then it went to PS1 at that point. So it definitely kind of jumped around quite a bit during like development, but. What we got though is, you know, it was definitely an RPG that I feel like introduced RPGs to a wide berth of like Western audiences here. So, so Candace, let's have you start off actually in terms of like what Final Fantasy VII meant to you when that game launched.
RPGs and I had already had a pretty intense history up to then. You know, like I'd played Final Fantasy, I'd played Phantasy Star. Phantasy Star, I thought was going to be my favorite RPG series. I liked Final Fantasy. I enjoyed all of the games that I currently played, but I didn't think I connected with any of them more so than Phantasy Star. And then Final Fantasy VII came out. And I was just really impressed with the fact that I was going to get to play an RPG on the PlayStation. Because like the PlayStation was pretty new. And
3D graphics and all were new, so
right. And I thought, like, how is that gonna work? Because up until that point, it always been this top down, you know, side view pixel, you know, situation. And I was like, I don't even know how they could do that, and I'll still be invested. And maybe I don't want it to look too real, and maybe I kind of want it to stay looking like this. And
Final Fantasy VII, it's too real.
Right. But like, think about it. Back then, that was crazy. You know, That was completely bananas. Like, we didn't see anything that looked like that. And it was closer to a weird futuristic view of video games than I thought we were going to see. And so I was so enamored with the music. And I used to play it and I would pause it and just let the save music put me to sleep at night because I loved it so much.
Yeah.
And it was one of the first RPGs that I could bond with my little brother about. You know, the same one that I trolled all the
right.
time.
Smatsky, yeah.
Right. Where I made up fake hockey players just to troll him. It was the first game that like we bonded over and we would talk about together, and we would say like, you know, how are you doing, like have you gotten to this part yet, and have you met this person, and up until that point it was very much we played our own games by ourselves and we didn't really bother the other one with it unless we were messing with each other. So this was the first time we actually bonded over a game, let alone an RPG, which had always been my arena and not really his. You know, he would rather play Clay Fighter and that other trash than actually sit and follow a story, because he was young, you know, I was right. older. But my young kid brain couldn't understand what his problem was. But this was the first time we actually could do that. And that to me is more important than the story, which is, I still feel, is just about this environmentalist who's getting macked on by some sweet honeys. And
that's what the whole game is all about.
And packing one hell of a sword.
That's
he's
right.
got one hell of a butter knife on him. And I mean, like, the story is fine and well. You know, the game is good and like that's fine, but I think I really hold on to that time in life that it came out and what it kind of meant for me as a gamer, which was like I saw that there was this wide open unknown of what games could do when it started with Final Fantasy VII.
Well, especially when it like expands after Midgard for sure, and like, you know, seeing that like world map for the first time after you spent like all that time in Midgard, it's just like oh okay, there's like actually like a whole other world, right. Like basically that you know that expands here.
Once that happened, once I unlocked that, because my mom used to stay up late with me and watch me play.
That's and, awesome.
Yeah, she would.
That's
she would
so awesome.
Keep me up way too late playing it though, and I would fall asleep while on the world map, and like so I would fall asleep and just stop moving, or I would walk into a wall and just keep walking, and she'd be like, yo, wake up, what are you doing, like we gotta at least get somewhere safe. And I'm like, all right, cool. And so what would happen is the next day she would come to my school, she would get me out of school, but she wouldn't tell me about that. So she would tell the front office that I had a dentist appointment. And I would get called up to the front to go to a dentist appointment. I would go outside. She's waiting in the car with Taco Bell, and she's more obsessed with us going to go finish the next part of the game than I was.
Nice.
And so she'd be like, hurry up and eat the Taco Bell. We got to finish it. We got to get back to the game as soon as we get home. She didn't even tell my dad that she like left work early, you know.
Your mom's right.
It's pretty all right. Yeah.
Yeah. She was fun with Final Fantasy. That's what I mean, though, is I got to see not just like everybody kind of become enamored with it. Everybody I knew was playing this game. We were all talking about it. It was such a big deal, I think, for gaming and for people who loved games that was kind of like how everybody jumped into Animal Crossing, you know, in the past few weeks. Everybody kind of united in that front, and it felt like we were all together on that. And that's what Final Fantasy felt like for me back then.
Well, for me, I mean, like, it definitely felt like kind of like a generational thing as far as like people getting into RPGs from there, because I mean, like, for me, I got into RPGs because of Chrono Trigger and like really because of Dragon Warrior actually before that. But I kind of knew what RPGs were, but then I really kind of took RPGs, I think, more seriously with Chrono Trigger and, like, you know, with the SNES RPGs from there. So when Final Fantasy VII came out, it's like, oh, cool, like another RPG, and oh, cool, it's on the PS1, and, you know, like, it's all 3D and everything, cool. It, like, the visual style, you know, didn't really kind of grab me right then and there, but I was always, like, enamored by like, the setting and, like, how it's kind of very, like, cyberpunky and kind of Blade Runner-ish. It's just like, oh, okay, that's, like, not something you typically see in, like, RPGs, like, at all. It was always, like, fantasy-based and, like, you know, dragons and shit like that, but... with this, you actually have, like, you know, machines and tanks and cannons and things like that. I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool and everything. Garnet, I was kind of curious on your take as well as far as, like, first time seeing Final Fantasy VII.
You know, mine was... what's really crazy about it is I think back to the whole thing that was packed in with Tobol. And I remember being so hooked on the demo that we finally got on the point where, like, well, maybe we should put Tobol in. You know, I don't know. Maybe we should.
Mobile number one was like the sales for that spiked. I feel like
give that a go. But I like that you brought up also the point about how it was originally part of the Nintendo Disk System, because, you know, keep in mind, like, this was like at the advent of FMV. Like, the first time you saw those sweeping vistas of Midgar and like these beautiful pre-rendered video stuff. Like, you know, granted, 5 years later, we'd all be like, okay, can I skip the FMV already? Because I'm over that. But at this point, it was all like, wow, can you believe this? It's like, holy cow, it's so amazing.
It's like a movie.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, like they nailed that piece of it. I think that they also sort of had hit, for those of us who had been playing Final Fantasy games on, you know, Nintendo prior to that, it's a constant source of contention whether the older systems that were more tactical in their nature, that required you to take more thought, that didn't have summons, that didn't have limit breaks, that didn't have, you know, all these, you know,
materia and all that stuff.
Yeah, didn't have all these slam dunks, so to say, whether that made them better or not. You know what? Those games are still out there and you can still play them and they're cool systems and they had been done a million times. But in the era that this thing came out, you had this presentation, you had this cool story, you had all these characters, then you had these play systems, the mechanics that just really grabbed you. I don't know. The whole package to me was just so overwhelming. And I think that was key. Then the fact that the way they had done the demo, and then, you know, when you actually sat down and played the game for the first time and you're going through the wow. Like, so basically the game's going to be 8 Mako reactors, and then I'm going to have like a really big boss fight, and then the game's going to be over. And, you know, you hit the map world, overworld map, and you're like, what's even happening?
Tutorial over.
And then giant snake thing is there, and next thing you know, you got chocobos and you're going to the game. I'm like, what the hell is even freaking happening here? And they had done such a good job of luring us into the game that if we had thought about it, we would have been like, wait, man, I played Square RPGs. This thing has got like another 50 hours in it. But you didn't think in that way because they had done such a great job of pulling you into it and capturing the imagination. And
I think the setup of it all, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's really where the genius of it was. And, you know, you can go back and retcon Final Fantasy VII as much as you want to. You can certainly pick anything apart as much as you want to. I think that there's nothing like it in the and that doesn't mean it's the greatest thing of all time. I just think there's nothing quite like it in my playing experience, and that's why it's like got a special spot in my heart.
So Final Fantasy VII is probably the most impactful game of my entire life.
Yes!
It was the first RPG I played, and just, I mean, I have so many memories attached to it and the music and everything about that game. And when we first got it in my house, my brother and his friend Evan were playing it, and I would come watch them play it for hours. And if I was lucky, at the end of whatever the hell they were doing, they'd let me fly the ship around. And I was like, oh, this is super cool. Highwind, so cool. or like, you know, play one of the Gold Saucer snowboarding games, or help, you know, do chocobo races. They were really playing that game hard. When I started playing it, I got to Nibelheim and then accidentally saved over my brother's game. And my life could have ended there. In a different reality, my life ends there where my brother kills me from doing that.
Yeah.
So I actually was not allowed to play the PlayStation for a really long time after that, until we came up with a system where, you know, I would save on the 99th slot and this other slot. We basically like double save in order to prevent that from ever happening again. And mind you, he was super duper far in the game, like third disc, like,
oh wow.
Yeah. So at least it, you know, I got to watch him do the speed run of Midgar and like get back to where he was. I don't know. He treated me differently from then. That but yeah, I mean, I fell in love with the world. I fell in love with the characters. The story is one of the best stories in games, even though the original version was translated kind of bad, and a lot of the story was confusing and weird.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you there, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we all made sense of it. And the overall story is, you know, it's a classic. It's a banger. It's amazing. And being able to play parts of that today in this new one is, you know, while it's bringing back my least favorite part of Final Fantasy VII, which is Midgar and the entire first disc, I really
appreciate it. There are like two camps to that, honestly. Like the people who love Midgar and the people who love like when it expands to like the open world.
Yeah, the open world was mind blowing. Like, I mean, you were just saying,
Garnet, it's a second, like, game. It's a second game.
Yeah, you're like, why
absolutely. Not love both?
I want to love both. I have a sweet spot in my heart for both of them. I cannot argue that once you hit the open world, it blows up into a much larger game. And, you know, for the first time, you really had like freedom. I mean, look, you had so much freedom that people were like, I don't even know what to do sometimes.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. Like the middle of the third act or so, you're like kind of wandering around going, I don't even know. Think about it. Like late into the game, you're like, wait, should I just go spend like 20 hours just like screwing around in the gold?
Yes.
Yes. I don't know.
The answer is yes.
But that exact thing is what people fell in love with, that they kind of made Final Fantasy pop. And so when they took it away in 13, everybody was just kind of like, but can we go back? We can go back, right?
Yeah. And you didn't feel hurried. You never felt hurried. You're like,
there's no rush.
I play this game and just soak it in and enjoy it. Maybe it's because I was young. Maybe because I was younger too. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we hadn't become like the people with no attention spans, but
I mean, you don't know how many times I flew past Ruby Weapon going to the Golden Saucer. Just like, you know, I'll take care of you one day.
Yeah.
It'll be there. It's still going to be there.
You'll still be there, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I figured, like, you know, talking about all that as well, we'll get into like also how it holds up today too. And this is very fresh in my mind, obviously, since I'm, you know, currently playing through it. I'm very far into it at the moment. You know, like, I know for me, I could say with utmost confidence, it doesn't hold up super well. In terms of like some of its gameplay and like, you know, in terms of like how you like control your characters as well, like, you know, there's no like kind of free like movement, really. It's just, you know, I think it's just because, again, it's that early 3D and actually moving around and like areas and stuff feels a little clunky in that sense. That, and also, as you mentioned there to Grindcraft, in terms of the translation too. I mean, I remember taking like a screenshot, putting it on my Instagram with like that shot, like if you're sneaking into the Shinra headquarters, and I think Tifa yells out to Barret calling him like a retard or something like that. I was like, whoa, this is not like 2020 PC friendly over here, you know? just like things like that. Yeah. I can totally understand like why the translation would have used words like that, in a sense, just because of like, you know, who the characters were and like they're more like, don't know, just more like comfortable with each other in that sense.
Also, and, because it was translation and not localization.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, so you'll find like a lot of like just kind of, I don't know, off-putting language like that. That's, you know, certainly more off-putting now than it would be like back in the 90s anyway. But yeah, like I always thought that, like, you know, that stuff didn't hold up well, but the, you know, the way the characters are written, the way that the story kind of like progresses, you know, the way that, you know, just like, it basically tells its story. Those are always like the things that kind of kept me going and like, you know, made me think, it's like, okay, I'm not sure if I want to keep going, and all of a sudden I hit like the story beat. This is like, ah, but I have to know like what happens next, or like I need to see like how this progresses again and all that.
That's their legacy. That's like the Square Enix legacy.
Yeah, exactly.
In game, their interactive storytelling is best in the business, and I feel like they've kind of lost it like in more recent times. But you know, that's what they're known for.
Yeah, I mean, just like with like teams like changing and all that. But yeah, Garnet, just kind of curious on what you think as far as like how it holds up.
You know, I haven't played the old one in a long. I think that it certainly depends your thirst for nostalgia and how much you remember good things. Like, how much patience are you going to have with the summon animations by the time you're 40 hours into the game?
That's also a big part of it. Yeah, Knights of the Round and all that. So.
in that day, it was still so novel that I remember getting excited, just like procking Leviathan, being like, fuck yeah, I want to see this, it'll be awesome. But I think that by the day, it's like, okay, you know, that sort of presentational style has become so replicated that you probably would get to a point where you're like, okay, I know what this is going to do. But at the same time, that's actually cheating yourself a part of the experience, because that is the essence of what makes this thing so amazing. I think, you know, I think that a lot of the mini games would probably be maligned. You know, like, I was thinking about this, like, we were getting ready for the show, and I was thinking, like, you know, I remember thinking that snowboarding was really cool, but I also remember thinking snowboarding was really janky.
It definitely is. I experienced that just recently, and I could tell you for sure it's very janky.
Why are you catching balloons?
It's a very snowboard kids kind of feel to it, I could tell you that.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, wait, how well does that hold up? I guess the answer is that doesn't hold up. But at the same time, it does, because it's like such a cool thing. I don't know.
A game within a game. That was unheard of.
Yeah,
totally. In 1997.
I like the submarine parts. Yeah, I can say that. Yeah.
It was giving us stuff that no other game had. It felt huge. Like, the entire game felt so massive and gave so many experiences in one game that nobody else was giving us at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, think about some of the other elements of it. Like how well would we really appreciate all the esoteric things? You know, that was like the heyday of strategy guides and game facts, right? It's like, imagine like really going through the trying to find Yuffie if you hadn't really had someone help you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite characters, except that, like, okay, so what you do is you got to go to the jungle and you got to wander around the jungle until you get in the fight. And once you get in the fight, then you need to answer these five questions in just the right order.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah. It's a huge pain in the ass if you don't know exactly what to say in that moment. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that I think some of those things would not hold up well to someone who had no nostalgia for them. But on the contrary, for someone who did have nostalgia for him, I think if you sat down and played this now, it'd probably be like, you know, getting to know an old friend again over a beer.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, I could totally see that. Yeah, I mean, like, for me, I mean, I didn't grow up with Final Fantasy VII because I didn't have a PS1 when it launched or anything. So I played Final Fantasy VII very late in the game. I think, possibly, I played Final Fantasy VII on my backwards compatible PS2, I want to say. That was the first time I ever played it, just so I kind of, like, you know, can say that, like, yes, I played Final Fantasy VII, you know, just kind of get that off my list pretty much. And I enjoyed it enough for what it was. I was just like, okay, it was a good RPG, but, like, my mind is, you know, always kind of goes back to Chrono Trigger as far as, like, RPGs and the quality of them and everything. So that's a very unfair comparison for a lot of games like that.
Humble brag.
Yeah. But it's, you know, that's just like kind of what, like, I guess, like, speaks to me more. And I do enjoy more of that 2D era more than the 3D era in general anyway. And that goes for, like, fighting games especially, you know. So that's kind of like where I come from with it. But I do certainly enjoy Final Fantasy VII for, you know, again, like, what it brings, and certainly the storytelling, you know, the storytelling and the music, certainly. Those are the things that don't age and, you know, that people can still enjoy to this day to its fullest, honestly.
Yeah, that's what holds up for me. And I think most of the world would say the music in Final Fantasy VII is the best video game music ever written, like, straight up. I mean, God, the music of Final Fantasy VII is the reason I do what I do. It's why I'm a music producer. It's, you know, all of my first produced music was like Final Fantasy VII sampled or remixes of Final Fantasy VII music. I mean, my latest track is inspired by Final Fantasy VII. The music is, it, you know, it's unparalleled. No one's topped that.
The role-playing game world has sort of settled into some pretty well-formed practices.
It's certainly deviated into other genres, if you will. You know, like there is no straight up RPG, like just an RPG anymore, really. They're always like RPGs with like, you know, action or like any other genre, pretty much. Like they kind of like meandered into like their own things. And that's always kind of like the interesting thing with like RPGs in general for me, is like the fact that there are so many branches of them, and that an RPG can really mean anything nowadays, you know?
Yes.
You really have to like specifically say it's like, it's an RPG, but it's more like Phantasy Star, it's more like Final Fantasy or whatever it may be. That's kind of like required nowadays. But as far as like with like Final Fantasy VII, though, you know, again, like it kind of comes down to, for me, like those kind of like story beats and just like those moments, really, like as you're going through the game and like, you know, those things, like I guess I kind of keep hooking you through, and you're like, I can't believe this happened, I can't believe that happened. And obviously there's, you know, the one moment with Aerith that we'll certainly get into. But I figure we'll kind of get into like our favorite memories just kind of playing through the game as well. And these could be like memories just like, you know, as far as like what happens like in the game, but also if you have like any stories that like, you know, happened outside the game that just kind of reminds you of it, feel free to share here as well.
I'm perfectly glad going first, because mine really is going back to the demo. Like the demo, I just can't express like how much the first time, I just remember sitting with my best friend and being like, just looking at each other like dumbfounded, like what the hell is actually even happening here?
You know, this is like a video game.
Yeah, it's just so blown away, like immediately, like, because think about how quickly it slammed you into the action. You like get off the train, you run into the Mako reactor, you're setting the bomb, you're ready, action's happening really fast, and then it settles into that little pace where you do some exploration, you're in the town, you do the flower girls, like everything, just what we now would come to expect from rich experiences of giving me lots of different stuff. It was at that time just sort of like jaw dropping, like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then, like I said earlier, like the walking on the world map piece, there are so many other monumental pieces, but I feel like those are the two things that are just left a mark.
Dude, Golden Saucer, like, and flying the ship. But mostly Golden Saucer.
Yeah, like, probably, he really likes that part.
Yeah, it's huge.
I mean, that lifetime pass, I could tell.
Dude, definitely. And also, like, Kate's this my favorite character, and he kind of like embodies the spirit of Golden Saucer. And God, so I've done so many chocobo races in my time. Let me tell you.
Like, and breeding. Here, yeah.
And yeah, I have raised a lot of chocobo in my time.
I'll have you know.
Great inspiration for a track right there.
Oh, you know, there is a track in the remake that's a chocobo trap song, and it's fucking amazing.
Oh, wow. No way.
And instead of rapping, it has just chocobo sounds, and it's hilarious.
It's that Ratchet Jack chocobo.
Yeah. It's like the third song you find. When you're exploring.
Oh, God.
But you can collect music in the game. It's awesome. But
which Final Fantasy was it that had that heavy metal chocobo song? There was one. Chocobo, bo, 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 bo. God, it was so bad. I'm going to find that for us.
All right. So I don't know if there's like one, I guess, like particular moment that kind of jumps at you there, Grindcraft. Wasn't sure if there was like any sort of like story beats, I guess, that kind of like really jumped out at you, like anything that like,
I mean,
that had that impact on you, I guess.
I mean, losing Aerith obviously is like huge, and and I think my first dates ever in life were in Final Fantasy VII. So
the Golden Saucer day, for sure. Yeah,
that is the cutest thing I've ever heard, I think. yes
so yeah,
very wholesome there. Yeah,
very wholesome.
Yeah. All right, Candace.
I honestly feel like I didn't know that I was into long hair on dudes until that game.
Yeah.
And I also found out specifically gray hair, which is difficult, really, to like find that subtype. But no, think. Yeah,
I have silver hair.
There we go. What are you
doing?
You're
like describing me right now.
Perfect. Right, but no, I didn't. I didn't know that so many parts of this game were even a possibility, right? Like everything that we had played up until that point was so, it felt like there were only a few notes and a lot of the story had to carry the majority of the game, right? That's kind of why we played RPGs. The story had to carry everything because we didn't see anything on a visual kind of cinematic level that was really trying to wow us. You know, the story was why we were there and what we could contribute to the story. And as somebody who always wanted to be a writer as a kid, that spoke to me. You know, I loved reading and I loved stories, and here I could play one. And that was kind of what really endeared me to video games. And so then I got to see my next favorite medium, which was, you know, movies. And I'm playing this game that feels like that. You know, sure, I look back on the graphics of the old game now and, oh, I was young. And but it's still like I still get goosebumps because I remember being so endeared to that the very opening. The second that you have control and you're walking past the trains as Cloud, you hadn't felt anything like that in another game up until that point. It's like literally the first few minutes of that game were it was an epiphany for me. It was me going, if they can do this, there's no telling what they can do in the future.
Well, certainly set the stage for like storytelling going forward, not only for RPGs, but right. For gaming in general.
And that was just walking past some fucking trains.
Right, yeah. A painted background.
And yeah. I was blown away by it. And I was so excited to see where gaming would go when I got to engage in this person's life and their story to such a very visually kind of stunning level. And that I think is really the major appeal to the game and where it started and where Square Enix took it. I feel like what's funny is like I played Final Fantasy VIII. I didn't quite care. I mean, it was good, I guess.
Blasphemy.
Like it was fine.
Blasphemy. No.
You're going to the cross of this one, Candace.
Listen, it had some pretty boys and it had some pretty girls.
So it's everything that you need right there.
Yeah, it's got like this like guy that's like whatever and cool. But I was already like past my flipping boy phase, you know, wasn't into it. But there was it didn't grab me at that point, even though it was visually incredible to look at.
Balaam Garden something for life.
Oh my God, this guy. But there is something about the first time, right? And I feel like Final Fantasy VII was the first time we got to envision what could be the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, again, like for me, I mean, I didn't grow up with the game. I didn't like play it like when it first came out or anything. Certainly took like a number of years before I did eventually play it. But certainly the story beats that came across, I mean, you know, with the whole thing with Aerith, that was like spoiled for me beforehand because like that became like the most well-known spoiler pretty much in gaming history, more or less. But I do appreciate after what happened to Aerith, the game kind of gives you some fake outs a little bit there, like with like Tifa when she's strapped to like the gas chair, you know, like you're not quite sure if she's actually going to die because they already did kill off a character. Same thing with Cid, like when you're in like the rocket and like the debris falls on him and he's kind of like, you know, almost giving not really a death speech, but kind of like almost on the verge of giving a death speech. And you're like, come on, you know, and like the wife like helps out and everything. But, you know, it is kind of funny like how the game kind of gives you those fake outs. It's like, well, we did it before. Who's to say that we're not going to do it again? You know, so I always find that very interesting there. And also kind of going back to Cid as well. I mean, like, I love Cid. I think Cid might be my favorite character, honestly, or like my favorite like playable character, we'll say, in the game. Like, I'm just like a big fan of his. And like just like his relationship with his wife, especially like when he's flipping out over like the tea when you like first get to his house, mm-hmm. and everything. I found that very interesting. And, you know, it kind of makes you think that like, wow, Cid's kind of a jerk to his wife and all this at first. But then when you're speaking to his wife and she's kind of giving more context to like, you know, who he is and what he stands for and everything, you kind of understand like a bit more and like you kind of see that he is like a bit softer than how he originally, how he originally comes across as. And yeah, like it's just really, really interesting, especially like, you know, again, when you go back to Rocket Town and, you know, again, like you're basically doing the whole thing like in the rocket and you go off into space and all that stuff. When the wife helps him out, like you kind of see more of that softer side. It's like, okay, this is more of who he is, I feel like, in that sense. It's just more of like, you know, a lot of the stress basically kind of puts on himself, which I totally relate to 100% as far as like how you get, like when you're just like, you apply so much stress to yourself and like no one like around you can like, you know, really kind of get you out of that. So I totally understand like where Sid's coming from with that. So that might be part of it. But we did have some listener responses here as well going into favorite memories. So I just want to go through those, starting off with Nefertiti Jordan, who says, I love everything about the City of the Ancients. It was so beautiful, even on the PS1. I can't wait to see what they do for the remake. So the City of the Ancients definitely had a very, very weird vibe to it. Like it kind of had like a, it was almost like an underwater vibe because there was a lot of like shells, I remember. And it's basically like an underwater city, but without the water, basically. Like that's kind of like what it kind of came across to me as. Then there's Lily Peters, who says, oh my god, I can't wait for the music. I'm getting tingly just thinking about that Battle Fanfare. And we were just talking about the Trap remix for the Chocobo theme. So definitely looking forward to hearing that. There is Asif Z, who says, the adventure to getting the Knights of the Round summons. Omni Slash, fighting Ruby Weapon, Eris's death, traumatic. So definitely a lot there. Paul Reynolds, who says, there's too many to choose from. One, Sid telling people to get their tea. Two, seeing the Golden Saucer for the first time, and of course the date section late on disc one. Three, finding the secret stuff flashback in the mansion and the videos of Aerith's parents on disc two. I remember that was very enlightening for sure. Then there's Mike Crawford, who says, honestly, the snowboarding game at the Golden Saucer as a kid, I wasted so much time on it. So Grimecraft, let me ask you, what's the one game that always kind of brought you back to the Golden Saucer? Like the one game that like, this is like the one I'm going to be spending a lot of time into.
Chocobo Racing,
yeah.
I had an empire of amazing Chocobo. So, yeah, I was in between the Golden Saucer and the farm, you know, more times than I can even remember. Like, my favorite one is the black one. His name is Comet. Comet, my cool black Chocobo.
Yeah.
Shout out to Comet.
Yeah, shout out Comet. I miss you.
Chocobo haven't gained another angel.
Yeah.
Then there's Russell Brown, who says battling Emerald and Ruby weapons. So there's like the big boss characters they could face at any time. Like they're very optional, but certainly very tough. So then there's Johnny Carlson, who says enjoying Sid's charming language and hospitality for the first time. Kenneth Pilger, who says the moment when Nanaki, Red 13, found out his father didn't abandon him and actually sacrificed himself to save everyone. Aww. Has always stuck with me. So yeah, that was also very cool.
Yeah.
Then there's Jacob Battenhausen, who says the first time I saw Lucky Sevens was pretty dope. So have any of you guys gotten Lucky Sevens before?
What? Sounds familiar. What was it?
So for those of you who don't know, Lucky Sevens is if you're if you're in battle and your health is at 7,777, and the game just kind of, you know, all of a sudden goes Lucky Sevens or like something like that. It's like Lucky Sevens, and then like your like the character whose health is at that goes into like rainbow colored, and then you basically keep attacking for 7,777 damage like over and over to the enemy. That's more or less how like it works, but like I wasn't sure if
that's a thing. That's a real thing.
That is a real thing. Yep, that is an absolutely real thing. It's a very rare thing, but I believe there are some people who found out a way to trigger it, or at least found out a way to like get themselves to 7,777 health pretty reliably in order to activate that. But there's actually a pretty good YouTube video out there of someone who modded Vincent Valentine, I believe, to look like Sephiroth. And so they have them at the Lucky Sevens facing off against like the final boss Sephiroth. And just doing that over and over and over, the 7,777 damage. So it's pretty cool. Then there is Andrew Moretti, who says, my favorite memory was finally getting Knights of the Round Table materia. It took forever, but I was so proud of myself when I finally got the gold chocobo. So Grindcraft, I imagine the gold chocobo is yours right the very beginning. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. There you go. And my buddy Andrew McEntee here says, this was my first exposure to Final Fantasy, so there was a lot. If I had to pick one, first time you leave Midgar and see the open world was eye-opening. Like, you only just scratched the surface. And I definitely got into that just earlier there. Also, my buddy here, Shondell McFall, who says cloud cross-dressing.
That is where I'm at in the remake right now, and that is such a fucking awesome part of the game. That's the best part of Midgar. That whole, once you get to the Wall City or whatever it's called, Wall
I
Market.
I learned so much about myself then.
Yeah. And Don Corneo and all, yeah.
Yep.
Very cool. And finally here, Steven Durkositz, who says, I miss when Aerith was Aeris. Fucking weebs.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things, and I almost feel like it's Mandala effect at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Where I remember saying Shrina. I remember saying Mako, Tifa, mm-hmm. and Ares.
Yeah.
And then it feels like a new history has been written. With all those things sounding different and looking different.
But. Because a bunch of anime kids have corrected us for too long, and now we don't know what everything is called.
Actually, it's manga.
Anime.
Yeah, anime. Yeah. Well, at least with, like, Aerith's name, and, like, I know that was, like, the original Japanese, like, spelling of it or whatever, and I'm not quite sure why they went with Aeris for the North America version, but, I mean, like, it didn't make too much of a difference for me, honestly, but yeah, no, I totally get it as far as, like, the pronunciation, things like Mako, Mako, things like that. I mean, like, we're kind of hearing them, like, pronounced for the first time in an official, like, Square Enix game with like, Remake, and, like, I know that kind of threw some people off who would, like, pronounce it, like, the other way as well, so.
Well, here's the fucking thing, like, Tifa, or Tifa, sorry, Tifa,
sorry,
the game says Mako, and I'm like, what? Like, what is this inconsistency now? Like, maybe it was just that one voice line, but it confused me extra, like, when I was playing. And
so thank you to everyone for sharing your favorite memories there of Final Fantasy VII. Definitely a lot of good ones there.
Choose your character.
That's going to lead us now into Random Select, which is a yes or no 15-question game to guess which video and character that I am this week. So basically, it's going to be you three acting as a team to answer 15 yes or no questions, or up to 15 yes or no questions, in order to guess which video game character that I am. Normally there have been, like, you know, hints attached to this as well, but we're going to keep this hint free. I think you guys can definitely get it here. So whenever you guys are ready, you can start with the first yes or no question.
Are you a humanoid?
Yes.
Oh.
I'm not Chocobo.
You're not Rodeo?
I'm not Rodeo.
Wait, does this count as a question? You're not doing it on theme. Like, you're not going to be a character from the theme of the episode, right?
Well, you should probably ask the question if you have one in mind.
God damn it. I don't want to waste a question.
He's being so flirty with it. Ooh, ask me. Are you from Final Fantasy?
Yes.
Wait, why didn't you make that more specific?
That's up to you, dude.
We got 13 more.
Fine. Are you from Final Fantasy VII?
Yes.
No, okay.
Wow, you're getting
well, you wasted a question because, like, I answered.
Are you a playable character?
Yes.
Are you male?
Are you a man? Yeah.
Am I male?
Yeah. Yes.
No.
Well, that's now we got him.
Yeah.
Are you Yuffie? Yeah.
No.
Are you from Midgar?
Not from Midgar, no. If you're talking about originally from, then no.
From a village nearby. From a province. About 3 hours south of Midgar.
I mean, you know it's a female, you know it's a playable character, you know it's for Final Fantasy VII, so.
Are you Tifa?
Yes. Very good.
Success! Tell him what he's won!
And that's right. You won yourself a golden chocobo!
And a seahorse! Wow.
And a seahorse! That's right, a complimentary seahorse. But yes, you got Tifa for Final Fantasy VII, so awesome job there, guys. So that is episode 203, basically, in the books. Let's have you guys tell people where they can find you online. So let's go with Garnet, and then Grindcraft, and then Candace.
At Garnet Lee on Twitter is where I mostly reside, and I hearken back to all the time. Of course, and come check out some Raw Fury games. They're awesome. You'll like them.
You can find me at Grimecraft on pretty much every platform. I'm on Twitter most, Instagram, Twitch, and my new song, Mako, featuring Megaran, is out now. And nice. If you like Final Fantasy VII and trap beats, you should listen to that instead of the Chocobo trap song in Final Fantasy VII.
So much better. So much better. Yeah.
It is kind of like a better version of that. Yeah.
I'm Candace Likes You on Twitter. Candace Loves You on Twitch. I'm going to be playing Green Hell coming up here soon. On Twitch, but I'm gonna be playing Final Fantasy also. But those are the two places you can find me. Everywhere else is inconsequential. Go download download Grimecraft song and go play Raw Fury games. There. There you go.
Sweet. Extra plug.
Nice. Yeah. And I just want to give some shout outs here to our patrons who are $2 and up here. Francisco Limas, Mac the Ball, Michael Butler, and Rosaline Della Russo. So thank you very much, everyone, for helping support the show. And if you too would also like to support the show, you could check us out at patreon.com/rcast with all the different perks and stuff that you can get there. So definitely a lot there, and check us out, and thank you for supporting the show. If you'd like to send us any feedback, opinions, retro games, or topics for us to cover, or anything at all, really, you can email us at rcast@retrozap.com, and be sure to check out retrozap.com for all sorts of other amazing podcasts. It's your home away from home if you're crazy about Star Wars, Animaniacs, or pop culture in general. There's also us with Rcast, so be sure to find us on iTunes to subscribe, give us 5 stars, and tell your neighbors. We're also on Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play Music, so there's absolutely no reason to not follow another retro gaming podcast. You can also find Rcast on Twitter at ArgPodcast, same thing on Facebook, facebook.com/ArgPodcast, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TheGuiltyMan. And yeah, that is episode 203 in the books, and until next time, keep it retro.
Hi, I'm Chris Penwell from ActiveQuest.
And I'm Joseph Yaden.
We are a video game podcast that takes a deep dive into the news, covering the latest gaming trends and stories pertaining to the industry.
We also do our best to cover the most recent games and like to have an ongoing discussion with the audience.
You can contact us on Twitter at ActiveQuestShow
or via email at ActiveQuestPodcast@gmail.com.
Please leave us a review on iTunes if you like what you hear. You can also find us on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and Google Play.
We appreciate you listening, everyone.
And now, onto the show.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.